Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Ain't gonna hurt.
Is my boomstick.
Game over, man. Game over.
Welcome to the Bargain Bin. He is your host, Ben Mason.
And he is your co-host, Sandro Luketic. And today we're talking 1984's Night of the Comet. We assume if you're listening to this episode, you have already seen the movie, which neither of us had up until I picked it last week.
Ridiculous. When does that happen?
Every now and then. I mean, it's a movie that I saw the beginning of a couple of years ago, and then I don't remember why, but I never finished it.
I feel like the only time we do a movie that you haven't watched is when we get some obscure fan pick.
Yeah, most times. I've been aware about this movie for a long time, though. The cover art on the VHS case in particular, which is pretty common for me. But it got a pretty decent release from Scream Factory, I think last year or the year before. And it made me realize I should really go back and check this movie out, because it is considered to be a cult classic. Now, just to get everybody up to speed here, there's a little storyline quote on IMDb I'm looking at right now that was written by Jamie Kidwell. And I'm curious to think it, or to find out if you agree with what Jamie's saying here, Sandro.
Oh, man. Pressure's on.
This often overlooked 80s film is about a pair of sisters, one the quintessential Valley Girl, who find themselves, along with a few others, as the sole survivors after a comet's wiped out all terrestrial life. It's funny, clever, well-written, and acted.
No. I do not agree with all of that.
The movie itself, I think, and I'm not saying I'm giving anything away here for my opinion, but the movie is about as well-constructed as this plot synopsis is written. Saying that a group of people are sole survivors does not make them sole.
The Lone Rangers?
Yeah. Saying that this film's about a pair of sisters means there's four sisters. If it's wiped out all terrestrial life, everyone's dead. The one thing I will agree with is that when they say it's funny, clever, well-written, and acted, this movie is definitely acted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a perfect representation of the movie we're about to get into. I assume you want to play your game before we start.
What game?
Perfect. Let's get into notes.
No, we got a game to play.
There's people in here I know, but not from movies we've covered, except for one.
Okay. I got six.
Fuck. I only recognized Mary Woronov,
okay,
who plays the scientist Audrey White, but I got her from two movies, and now I'm doubting that. No, we definitely covered both of them. I think you probably would have remembered her from Chopping Mall.
Correct.
I immediately recognized her as Joni's mom from Glory Days.
Yeah, which was her answer on our trivia game when we did Chopping Mall.
Perfect. So it's sticking with me. I'm learning.
All right.
Retention. And
those are the only two for her. So I'll make it easy for you. There you go.
Did we cover Captain Mary Stewart in anything?
Am I supposed to answer that, or like?
Oh, I don't know any of the other ones, so I may as well.
Oh, okay. So you're calling it already?
I don't know. I mean, we mentioned Jeffrey Lewis in California, but that's because he's the father of Juliette Lewis. But other than that, I've got nothing.
It's interesting because you just mentioned Chopping Mall.
Is Kelly Maroney in Chopping Mall?
Yes.
Perfect.
She's like the lead.
Fine. I didn't remember that. But she seems like, of any of them, she seems the most likely to be in that movie.
Yeah, she's the one that was set up with the nerdy guy. Like, that was doesn't matter.
It was the 80s. Okay. Hairstyles in the 80s confuse me. everybody looked like everybody.
Okay, but we only covered her in Chopping Mall. So okay. that's two down.
What about Bobby Beltran? Robert nope. Beltran? No? Okay. Sharon Farrell?
Nope.
I don't know, man. Who else? Are these actual like prominent characters in films we covered?
Well, Jeffrey Lewis.
In what?
Tango and Cash. He was Captain Lewis.
Oh, God, he was.
We only mentioned him when he talked about his daughter. No, no, we covered him.
All right. He's really good. I like Jeffrey Lewis.
I don't necessarily expect you to get the rest of these, but Anna Mathias was Daphne in Once Bitten.
Who's Anna?
I don't take the pictures down. I don't know.
Okay.
Ivan Roth was a psycho zombie in Night of the Creeps.
That seems about right. He plays the role well.
And John Stewart West was a riot cop in Return of the Living Dead.
Okay, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, that's why I said I didn't expect you to get these ones. I for sure thought you were going to get Kelly Maroney.
I should have gotten Jeffrey Lewis, in all honesty, first. That's fine. Well, I obviously my memory is shot, so.
Yeah, we know that. That's part of why I do this game.
But Mary Warrenoff for the win.
Yeah, you got that one.
Nice.
All right, now you may get into the movie.
Do I have to?
I mean, you picked it, so yeah.
Okay, blindly, may I remind you, but okay. An opening voiceover letting us know that a comet that wiped out the dinosaurs will be passing the Earth again shortly, and our planet will be passing through its tail. First off,
what happened to the dinosaurs?
We are rewriting history already.
I don't mind it. I don't.
Okay. Interesting. I thought you would have shit all over this already.
Well, I don't mind when people do things like, oh, there was actually a different disaster that, say, took out the dinosaurs, right? Because it lets you play with the idea that, you know, people back then didn't really know, and then it sets up for another catastrophe. It's fine.
It's an interesting workaround, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Some scientists are weary and lock themselves away. The rest of the population use the event as an excuse to party in the streets. That's fine. I get it. I mean, we saw this later in Independence Day with all of the people on top of one of the skyscrapers partying, welcoming the aliens with signs and everything, and then the building just gets destroyed.
Well, yeah, of course.
Cut to the famous El Rey Theater, where the manager is trying to hawk alien antennae headbands to customers, which doesn't make any sense to me.
These are horrible.
Yeah. But they're sized.
You might have I didn't think they were alien antennas. I thought they were supposed to be comets with like...
Oh, they are comets. You're right. I'm sorry. I was still thinking comet. Independence Day.
But like, who in their right mind is going to be like, I'm going to spend $9 on this?
Yeah. That's a lot of money in 84 too.
Yeah, for... What? Like, nobody wants that. I came out to party and watch a comet. I'm not celebrating the comet.
I don't know, man. If there was ever a situation where there's going to be a comet coming that close to Earth, I would not be celebrating and partying outside. I don't see it. I would be fearful. Movies have taught me to be afraid.
Well, you'd probably feel underdressed because you don't have a common antenna.
That's true.
Comet antenna.
Employee Regina Reggie Belmont, played by Catherine Mary Stewart, is playing her favorite arcade game, Tempest, but is pissed when she sees her name is no longer all over the scoreboard as DMK has taken sixth place.
Man, that is the most intense looking game of Tempest ever. Like, she is just rocking it.
Yeah, I've never played Tempest. It is a real game, but I've never found that arcade cabinet anywhere.
Meh, you're not missing out on much.
The manager, Mel, wants Reggie to walk the floor and make sure the weirdos aren't cutting up the seats. My only comment here is, oh, Southern California in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That's never been a fear in any theater I've been to.
But how do I identify the weirdos? Well, you see, they were the ones that were stupid enough to buy these antennas.
Yeah, anybody wearing one of these, keep an eye on them. Yeah, those are the dangerous ones. He tells her to stay out of the projection booth and stay away from Dupree as, quote, he's been doing to me what he's been doing to her in the booth, which I find hilarious.
Hmm.
No, you didn't?
Hmm. Not quite sure I'm supposed to take that.
Fucking?
I mean, I get it, but...
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's pretty apparent what he means. He's obviously been screwed over repeatedly, and I'm assuming it's because of Dupree dealing with those film prints.
Why is he employed?
I don't know. I don't know should be the subtitle of this movie.
And to know that all that is going on, like, that's a little direct about your employees. Are you watching?
Man, as I went through this movie, I was ripping it apart until I realized that you can't do that here because the whole movie collapses upon itself. But I did it anyway. In the booth, Dupree, played by Michael Bowen, who some people may recognize from many, many films and television shows, but for me it's Buck from Kill Bill. He's trying to make money off of bootleg film prints. Now, this part I did find confusing. Reggie arrives, and immediately I don't know what this relationship is. Any idea? Because what I'm getting here is he'll give her $15 if they let each other in and out of the back door, if either has to leave, because that's where Dupree's got to meet the guy to give him the film print. But it's also implied that sex between the two is guaranteed, and she's annoyed about how that makes her look, like having sex with him for $15, which I find strange. And he assures her that he isn't giving her the $15 for sex. She's worth way more than that, which is one of the cringiest lines of the movie.
Yeah, but was that supposed to be a compliment of some sort?
I don't know what's going on here, and it made me feel really stupid.
It really is the most like nonchalant sexual relationship here, where it feels like they're literally just doing it because they have nothing else to do.
Yeah, but I also don't know why he's giving her $15.
I think that's like just for helping with the door type thing, like but a cut.
But she was going to stay. Okay, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense because she's going to stay there anyway. I don't fucking know. Already, like we are just at the beginning of this movie and I'm frustrated with it. Anybody listening probably fully understands what's happening and think I'm an idiot. So you're right. I am. Reggie's sister, played by Kelly Maroney, who I have here. Somehow I forgot from Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
Well, she's watching coverage of the celestial event on TV at home where her mother Doris is having a party.
Stepmother
Doris is having a party.
Yeah.
I like the bit about by the reporter on TV, how he mentions that everywhere the event has started is now without telecommunications. How it hit Newfoundland or Newfoundland. Everybody outside of Canada mispronounces Newfoundland.
I really like this reporter.
He's great, right?
I feel like it's one of those situations where they should have played it up that people were already missing. And they just like grabbed some guy and were like, hey, yeah, go out there, man.
It's great because he looks somewhat confused, incredibly annoyed, and kind of scared.
Yeah.
Reggie uses the excuse that she won't be home because she's watching the comet with her science class. Doris is not happy about that.
She must have read through the very blatant lie that was. That's what you came up with?
I mean, she's 18 years old. I think that's realistic.
And, like, the best thing that they could do is that... I'm going to get the names wrong. Kelly Maroney's character is like, I knew about it.
Yeah.
Oh, in that case...
Doris is an awful person.
Oh yeah.
I forget the name. Sharon Farrell, who played Doris, does this very well. she's incredibly mean to the kids. Been cheating on her husband with multiple guys. And then you get the slap. She slapped Sam so hard across the face. And what I did not expect was Sam to return it. What I also did not expect was for Doris to full off slug Sam in the face after that, knocking her backwards.
How dare she call her out for clearly flirting with this guy in their house with the dad gone in front of everybody.
Yeah.
Oh.
And later we get that line from Doris saying, "I'll never marry another man with kids." So she's already checked out. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
As the event begins, Sam decides to spend the night in the steel shed in the backyard. That's not explained whatsoever, other than, I guess, to get away.
She just said that she, like, when she comes find her later, she says, "Well, I was going to run away, but I just stayed in the shed." It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I left a note and everything. Uh-huh.
Yep.
So you slept in a shed.
I mean, we've all been there.
No.
Most of us have been there.
Sure. I feel sorry.
Reggie and Dupree miss it because they're having sex in the projection booth, which is a perfect time to talk about what Superman can and can't see through.
I mean, I guess, thought it was pretty common knowledge that it was lead.
It's totally lead. Nobody doesn't know that. But no. I guess it's just to explain that the room they're in is built from steel, much like the shed. I wonder if that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the visual effects of the tail of the comet? horrific?
Horrible.
Terrible.
So bad.
It looks like trash. It's probably the worst effects of the movie. And half of the visual effects here are done with tinting. So, come on.
Yeah, it's quite bad. It's not even Pigeon Dove level.
Oh, God. Pigeon Dove is leaps and bounds above this. When the sun rises the next morning, the city is empty and the sky has a dark red hue. The effect is poorly done. There's no way around it. Like I said, it's just use of lens tinting. But the idea is really cool. And I think it kind of provides a look of almost a comic book panel that just doesn't translate well to film. So people have turned to red dust, clothes and empty vehicles litter the streets, and we're presented with one of my favorite movie scenarios, and that's having an entire city to yourself, because that always makes me think, what would I do? And I think we find that in a lot of video games. I think that's why some of these video games are so popular. Things like even, why am I forgetting the name of it now? Zombie game in a mall, Dead Rising. Is that right?
Sure.
Okay. That and just like having your like open world video games where you can just do whatever you want. There's a weird sense of freedom there that nobody will ever have in their actual lives. Reggie wakes up to the morning DJ on the radio while Dupree is pissed that the guy from the night before hasn't brought back the film print, which we never saw him give to anybody, I don't believe.
Maybe the guy didn't show up because you just shove the reel in a box.
He storms out to track the guy down. And Reggie comes at him with, "Hey, what about my $15? So I'm still confused about this. Anyway, Larry doesn't make it far. Larry being Dupree's first name.
No, what an ambush.
He just opens the door and is attacked by a zombie.
It's like the zombie knew and was waiting, because as soon as the door opens, you see the hammer swing.
Yeah, the wrench.
Oh, sorry, wrench. But it's like, was he just sitting there waiting for that door to open? Like, he was primed and ready.
This is so fucking dumb.
Okay.
But it is so fucking awesome. I loved it. It's just so ridiculous, but the zombie effects look fantastic. They're so good. I love that we're immediately thrown into a zombie fight. First zombie murder of the movie. And then, while I love this part, I fully expect you to hate the next part.
Okay.
Reggie's back at Tempest.
Uh-huh.
and reclaims the sixth spot on the scoreboard.
That's not how it works.
I know. As soon as I saw this, I'm like, oh, he's going to rant about this.
It would have just dropped him to seventh. You need to do a whole bunch of games now.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know I was going to be bothered by that?
Gee, I wonder.
But you don't know. Maybe I wouldn't have brought it up at all if you didn't.
Oh, there's no fucking way you wouldn't bring this up. That's why I got to it first, because I knew this is a talking point for you. I'm like, I picked this out. I know this is hot garbage. Sandra's going to lose his shit.
Come on, man. You're painting me out to be something I'm not.
Anyway, she goes outside, props open the door with an ashtray, which promptly slides out of the way, locking her out. All right, I guess. Again, the red tint effect of the sky is only really shown when the sky is visible. Otherwise, any sun shining at ground level is still normal color, which looks really off. I get it's low budget, but still. I guess it does add to the campiness of the movie, though, because this movie is cheesy as fuck. I should stop with that. It's an easy nitpick, but I enjoy it.
Okay.
The zombie attacks Reggie in the alley, and she pretty easily fights it off and rides away on Dupree's motorcycle.
Yeah. Why did he go back behind the dumpster?
I don't know.
This zombie is like a stealthy, just great ambusher.
And he can talk.
Yeah, I didn't get that part. I was like, are these supposed to be sentient zombies? Are they supposed to be like,
that's a very good point.
I get that the movie paints the picture later that there's a transitioning stage. So they are slowly becoming zombies, and up until that point they do have some of their senses to them.
Yes.
But this early in the movie you don't know that, and you're just like, okay, well, what kind of zombie am I seeing here?
And by the time they get to that explanation, I've already forgotten that the zombie talks. I just, at that point, I'm like, well, this is weird. I don't understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he waits outside the door for Dupree. He then, I guess, assumes that Reggie's going to go look for him, so he hides behind the dumpster.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then he yells at her, and she takes him out and speeds away on the motorcycle. The music here is great. A very 1950s, 1960s sci-fi soundtrack.
I was a little surprised that she picked up the bloody wrench and was just like, ew, but didn't question it any further.
Yeah, Southern California. You find shit like that everywhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Her reaction after getting on the motorcycle and speeding off, her decision to head home and find Sam, seems questionable to me. I can see why some people would be like, well, you go check on your family. Yeah. I would probably go to the police. Because you have no reason to believe that this is happening everywhere.
I'm confident that people in a panic state are not going to do that. And they're going to be more instinctually compelled to go check on their family.
I don't know, man. If I was confronted with a monster, say, I have no reason to believe there are any other monsters anywhere. You don't even know it's a monster. It's just this guy looks sick. Because she even says, look, man, I don't know what your scene is, but blah, blah, blah. So she's talking to him rationally, kind of expecting, like, maybe this guy's just fucked up on some crazy drugs. If that ever happened to me, if I got cornered by a junkie in an alley and fought him off, I would go to the police. I wouldn't be like, I hope my sister's okay.
Hmm.
I don't know. I guess that's a realistic take on an unrealistic film.
Yeah, because I always have to tell myself when watching a movie like this, perhaps they're in a world where they're not familiar with the same movie monsters that us viewers are.
That's not fucking true.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do, because look at the posters that are up in the theater.
I didn't do that. I was busy looking at the high scores.
Yeah, exactly. Video game man. I'm the movie guy. I noticed these. Even like the Death Race 2000 poster. One of your favorites. So they're aware of monsters. They're aware of zombies. They're aware of aliens. But actually encountering them, they have no idea what they are.
Yeah. But I guess really,
so am I. If I encountered a zombie in the street, I would immediately think, it's a zombie.
Again, you don't know. You're not in that situation. You might react differently.
We'll find out eventually.
Nah, I don't think we will.
Sam's actually survived the night because of staying in the shed.
Whoa. She's home already?
Yeah.
That was quick.
It is quick. Do you want to talk about the shots of her riding home?
Where she stops at a red light?
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about that, but I wouldn't be stopping at that red light.
No, God no.
That's
showing logical thinking, which we just said doesn't work right now.
At that point, I find it a little weird, though, that there weren't more cars on the street and abandoned.
That's a problem I had, too. There's only that one. There's that one car stopped at the light.
But if you've been driving for any period of time and seen literally no people and no cars on the street, why would you stop for that red light?
No.
Why?
The sisters argue in the kitchen as Reggie tries to convince Sam that everyone is dead. And originally I missed everything they talked about in the scene because I'm seeing the spot in the background. The refrigerator has those fruit-shaped magnets on the freezer.
Okay.
I fucking had those when I was a kid, and my grandparents had them, and like I haven't seen those in fucking years, so I guess it would have been the 80s. I love those fucking things. Anyway, Sam, now in cheerleading gear, is shown how people have turned to dust. And not much dust, I have to say.
No. Well, like, it's you know, it was windy, so a lot of the dust didn't stick around, right? That's why there's so little. You know, she had to dump the shoe out, because the shoe kept the wind from taking all of it.
Yeah, poor Chuck.
Yeah, see, you're not thinking logically here.
You're right. I was thinking about their sand budget.
Mm-hmm.
Both
the sand is expensive.
It is, yeah. Both try to come to terms with everybody being dead, but then realize that the radio DJ is still broadcasting. So off we go to the radio station.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But here we find the studio completely abandoned, and that the morning show they're listening to, or they were listening to, was pre-recorded. Which seems weird to me, but okay. This does give us the intro to trucker Hector Gomez, played by Robert Beltran, who most people probably know from Star Trek Voyager, but not I, sir. He holds them at gunpoint until he's sure they aren't zombies, which is probably the only smart move we've seen somebody do in this movie so far.
Yet.
Reggie runs to the bathroom to get sick when she realizes Dupree might have been killed by the zombies.
Dude, it was at this moment, for the first time, that I thought, is she pregnant?
Yeah, I thought that too. I'm surprised this movie doesn't delve into that at all.
No. And there's even a few, like, not callbacks, but there's a few other times where they have you question that.
Yeah, like she is questioned at one point towards the end of the film, where like this could have been accurate, like we could have been right about this scene, but nope, throw that away.
Nope, just had a moment of weak stomach, I guess.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff was starting to hit her hard,
like not getting that $15.
Yeah,
it's a perfect time for her and Hector to get to know each other, though.
I love how, at the beginning of the movie, when they're making the negotiation for the film reel.
Yeah.
The guy who's now dead was like, $100, that's not worth my time. 110? All right, now we're talking. But I'm going to have to give 15 of it to her. So, it's so stupid.
We shouldn't be worrying about math in a film like this.
No. Well, I mean, but like, come on, 110? Yeah.
We find that Hector spent the night in the back of his truck, and this gives us the answer to how a few people have survived now, because if you spend the night in a steel structure, you're fine for now.
Mm-hmm. He spent it with some random woman he picked up while trucking.
Trucker lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
Sam does the stupid move of taking over the airwaves. And this really just broadcasts that people are alive at the radio station. And I have to assume that you agree with me. This is just asking for trouble.
Yeah. Unless you're specifically, like, the character is like, we're going to use the airwaves to call out to other survivors.
No, she's just going to play DJ.
Yeah, she's just goofing around.
Teenage comet zombies. She immediately receives an on-air call. And the only info she gets is that the people calling were part of a think tank in the desert.
So who called? And why'd they hang up?
Why did they hang up? I have that question too. So let's cut to the think tank, where the scientists are listening to the three have a conversation over the airwaves. Just fucking call them back. You've got the number. The main people we meet here are Dr. Carter, Jeffrey Lewis, who we've mentioned, Audrey White, Mary Warrenoff, who, aside from Chopping Mall and Glory Days, was also in Silent Night, Bloody Night, and Death Race 2000. Shocker. The concern they have is bringing them back to the lab and the disintegration factor, which is a terrifying notion to me. People exposed to a lower dose of the comet's radiation turn to dust at a slower pace.
Mm-hmm. If they were exposed.
If they were exposed, exactly.
If they weren't exposed, then they're all good.
It makes no sense to me. Originally, I'm thinking, why can't they wait out the zombies? And then as the movie progresses, I'm like, oh, that's why. Sam ignores all warnings and goes drunk joyriding at night, which is understandable and probably something I myself would do. But she gets pulled over by zombie cops, which is great, but this is just a dream.
And she's and it's a good thing that it was a dream, because it made no sense to me that these cops were zombie-ified and still sentient to the point that they could pull her over and drive their vehicles. And
I loved it, though. I love this nonsense. I want more of it.
Well, but it made sense that it was a dream, is all I'm saying.
But it's time for Sam to strip down and wash in the bathroom sink. Just in time for a zombie cop to attack.
Oh, they got you again.
I have never been a fan of the double fake out, and this being a dream within a dream is, I hate it. It's cheap. But I think we should expect something like that from this. Well, okay, quick pause here. In this movie, Sandro.
Yeah.
Have you thought to yourself, huh, that's clever?
No.
Yeah. Or, I didn't see that coming.
No.
Yeah. No. I'm having a problem with Jamie Kidwell's synopsis for this funny, clever, well-written, and acted movie.
Yeah, no.
Reggie and Hector flirt a bit, and he decides to leave to check on his family. That makes sense now. Checking on your family at this point makes perfect sense. You've calmed down. You have a rough idea of what's going on. Time to go check on my family and make sure that they're okay.
Yeah, you know that there are some other survivors that potentially, for different reasons, I don't know if they've put it together yet that it's steel or anything, but there's a reason to believe that you could go check on your family and be hopeful that they're still alive. Although, I don't know how hopeful he is, because he even says, like, you know your family's gone. Essentially, like, he has to go be sure one way or the other.
He needs the confirmation. Exactly.
Yeah.
We get what I believe to be some necessary background on the sisters. We already know that their father's away, but knowing that he's constantly on the go because he's in the military and throughout his time with them has been teaching them his knowledge of guns and combat. So it makes these ridiculous characters a little bit more believable for what they do in the movie. Specifically their proficiency with guns. And we get something else I didn't really expect, and that's decent character development for Sam. How she's jealous about Reggie and Hector. I think in a decently acted scene where she's like just kind of like offhand, like scratching at her shoulder, revealing that she's got a rash appearing there. Actually, it makes me curious to know what's going to happen with the Sam character throughout the movie. I'm feeling like she might actually turn into a zombie, and that'll be a sister versus sister thing.
I wasn't too big of a fan of this scene.
No, why not?
I think it's how quickly they just start laughing it off, right? Because she's complaining that Reg steals every guy that she's ever been interested in, even before the world went to shit.
I find then, that very strange, specifically the age difference.
And but then, like, almost instantly, they have this very awkward laughing it off kind of moment. And it's like, that just felt so unnatural and forced.
Oh, you're talking about after they shoot up the car.
Yeah, is that not where we're at?
No, we're still in the radio station here.
Oh, my bad.
No, that's fine. They're back-to-back scenes. Because it's the next morning where they use the car as a target practice, destroying it with the Uzis. Only we're told they aren't Uzis.
I thought that too. Because she says, if it was Dad, he would have got us Uzis. And I'm not a gun aficionado or anything, but like the whole time I'm like, I thought those were Uzis.
Me too, man. I looked up an image of Uzis, like an Uzi SMG. I'm like, I was right all along. Those are Uzis. Like for the longest time, say maybe like 15 seconds. I was like, have I been thinking an Uzi is not an Uzi for my entire life after all of the action movies I've watched?
Nah, you should have gone to the more realistic idea that this movie just didn't care enough to do the research.
Well, it turns out that the gun actually did jam in real life, and that line, Dad would have gotten us Uzis, was improvised.
Oh.
Which means they didn't know what they were using. And that makes me feel better about myself.
Okay.
But yeah, this is where Sam admits the jealousy that you were talking about, swiping every guy and everything like that.
Which I'm okay with that part, right? Like, I'm okay with that if that's what she's feeling. And now maybe she's a little bit more eager to reveal that information because the world has ended.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the part where they so quickly just get over it that I'm like, that's awkward. This even feels like a super awkward laugh you two are sharing.
Okay. I didn't mind that, man. That just made me think 1980s Valley Girl comedy film. And I thought that's exactly what would happen here. So it seems like you got stuck in the trap I got stuck in earlier, and that was taking this too seriously. Because we agree we can't. But it's just
It just bothered me because it was acted poorly.
It's not acted poorly.
It's acted poorly.
That is not acted poorly.
Okay.
Okay. It's not.
It is.
It's not.
Yes.
Okay, fine. Maybe a little bit. Hector arrives at his mother's house, and I guess we're supposed to assume that she's dead, even though there's no reference to her being dust. Other than the record player is still on.
Why do we need this?
We don't.
Like, this entire scene with Hector could have just been later on he's asked, did you find them? No. But I think they must have needed to pad the runtime.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think Hector is one of the stronger characters here, too, though, in the movie. But mm-hmm. this scene is pointless.
I will say that despite the unnecessary status of this scene, that kid that he opens the door to is maybe the creepiest of the zombies to me.
Yeah, my next note says attack of the zombie kid. And that could be why the scene does exist. Just to get another action scene in there, because there hasn't been one in a while. It's a fun scene. I agree. It's odd that they've found a way to mix a decent bit of tension with the slapstick fall down humor. But it definitely works. So we cut back to the bunker, and Audrey discovers that the disintegration factor is quickening and is starting to suffer memory loss. I actually really like this part a lot, because I think she is probably one of the best, if not the best actor in the film. As she's slowly talking out, narrating, if you will, what's happening. She's making notes on her notepad. And she's writing loss of memory, but then crosses out memory because she's misspelled it and tries to write it properly. A really nice touch that kind of gives the movie a little bit more weight than it needs, because this movie is way too light for anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Carter sends Audrey and two other scientists to track down the girls and conduct blood tests in the field. What's your take on this think tank so far?
So the first time I watched the movie, I hated it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand what they were doing with it. It's probably the smartest part of this entire movie.
Agreed. It's just dealt with the worst possible way that you need to watch the movie a second time to actually appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this movie is, spoilers, not one I'd expect to rewatch anytime soon. If I didn't have to. Cut to a great shot of Reggie and Sam sitting on the hood of a police car. It's framed really well. The empty city is great. I find the red tinting of the sky and the buildings works really well here. The lights even going on the police car. And I think you'll disagree with me here. Well, maybe the first part you will. Up until this point, I've found Sam incredibly annoying.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
But do you find it weird that throughout the entire film, she's given the most character development? And she's mm-hmm. not the lead. The most emotional development. How about that?
I don't find it weird.
But she's not the lead character. That would be Reggie. Who?
That's my take on it as well. But
Reggie flip-flops throughout the movie. Like, she'll make incredibly intelligent choices, followed off with incredibly stupid decisions, and goes back and forth. And not only is she lacking in consistency with decision making, but the character seems 100% Valley Girl at some times and down to earth real human being at others. And there's no explanation as to why this happens. So if we're led to attach ourselves to a character, for me, I attach myself to the more consistent one, being Sam. Like, even her telling Reggie what was going on in her life before the comet passed, like anchoring herself to reality, in what is a bubbly, over-the-top Valley Girl character, it actually shows some weird progression that I enjoy, but this movie does not need, because it fucks up all the other characters.
Ah, they got one.
So what do we do after an emotionally heavy scene, Sandro?
Shopping!
We go to the mall. And I was getting into this movie through this discussion. Going to the mall, I'm fucking hooked now. You know how I love mall settings in movies. Malls and suburbs. I can't get enough of them.
And girls just want to have fun.
Great song. Love it.
Put that in a movie and I'm going to have fun with that scene.
It's a really fun scene, too. Valley Girls clinging on to something that they enjoyed in the before times. Montage of them dancing, going through different stores. And this is something that I think Romero did better than anybody in Dawn of the Dead. And what characters do in post-apocalyptic films, clinging to materialism when none of it actually matters anymore.
Yeah, especially with there's the one part where Sam has a dress with like a coat over it.
Yeah.
And this stuck out to me so much, even on my first viewing and again on my second viewing, where she asks Reg which one. And Reg says the second one. She's like, why? And she's like, it'll be in style longer.
Yeah.
And she agrees. And the whole time I'm like, you're the only ones left. You dictate what the style is now, right? Like,
I think the style now should just be protection from the elements.
No, but it's exactly what you were saying, though. It's holding on to these elements of the pre-apocalypse. This is their mentality, right?
Yeah.
They have not snapped out of that mental state yet.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think they ever will. They acknowledge it themselves, but then immediately contradict it later in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Unbeknownst to them, though, they're being watched on security cameras by a group of thugs who are former stock boys, who pretty much immediately go on the attack.
Why?
I don't know. I was thinking about this myself. They're just tormenting them.
Yes.
Pointlessly. There's gun battles. The gunfights are actually quite good. But yeah, tormenting them over store speakers while the other goons attack. I'm also at this point wondering why they're wearing sunglasses, which turns out to be a thing throughout the movie with multiple characters. We do get a decent payoff. But before we get there, we get a quick cutaway, which confuses me even more. The scientist's helicopter lands at the aforementioned police car, empty in the street. But why? Are we to assume that this is next to the radio station? Or
it's exact, well, not exactly what I was thinking, but in my mind, I'm like, why are they not arriving at the police station? How did they know to go to the mall?
They're not even at the mall yet.
But no, but I mean, in general, like, they say they're headed for the police or for the radio station, and they land at this police car. They go to the mall after that, and it's, well, how did you find them?
Yeah. And during this, the gang catches the sisters. And this is where we cut to the scientists, and they deduce that the girls would go to the mall, like you're saying, which one of the scientists calls an absolute monument to consumerism. I guess that makes sense in the movie. To me, I would have gone with they're probably searching for food because they don't really eat in this movie.
Nah, you don't need to eat.
But this is what I was saying before. What I was saying before about the reveal with the sunglasses, the physical deterioration of the gang, removing the sunglasses and seeing those sunken zombie eyes. The makeup effects here really remind me of, say, Evil Dead 2. Absolutely fantastic. My one qualm would be that
one.
I think that yeah, yes. With this one, yes, it's hard not to notice that. I guess they sped up the disintegration process to make them look scarier in this scene when it's only been a few minutes. And later we're told that it will increase its speed. That's fine. We don't know that yet. So they went from looking like humans to looking like zombies in a matter of minutes. And I found that kind of weird, but the effects do look fantastic. So the scientists and their guards arrive and wipe out the gang immediately.
No questions asked.
None. Just open fire, save the girls.
Yep.
I guess they can see that they look like zombies. I don't know why one of them's not like, maybe one of them's Hector. Probably don't shoot them all. But they know something's up with Sam and decide to only take Reggie back to the bunker. So Audrey and another scientist, there are two other main scientists I just haven't bothered naming because I don't care. They hang back to run tests on Sam and Hector, who hasn't even shown up yet. And a great scene here, which again, it really catches me off guard when there are enjoyable scenes in this movie. Audrey questioning Sam about her rash, to which the kid tells her that she always gets them from stress. And the whole time they're having this conversation, Audrey's setting up to euthanize Sam. And she's assured that the needle will stop the disintegration if she actually has been exposed. Again, I can't help but notice that the characters are horribly unbalanced because we have now spent more time with Sam than we have Reggie. But Sam passes out and Audrey just straight up shoots the other scientist. Did you see that coming?
No. None of what happens with this character coming.
Yeah, and that's great.
It's probably the most brilliant piece of writing this entire movie does is with this character.
Yeah. I even have right here written like some decent writing here. Audrey refusing to take anybody else back. And at this point, we're not really led to believe that the scientists are up to anything nefarious. So this is a really cool hint that things may not be what they seem, or that Audrey has gone batshit crazy. Hector returns to the radio station dressed as Santa Claus.
Why?
I asked that myself, and I asked it again later in another scene.
I don't... Why?
I find it hard to believe he would have the wherewithal to stop and bring gifts.
And even when he shows up at the mall, he's like before he sees Audrey, he's calling out to Reg. He's like, Merry Christmas, I got presents. Like, what? What?
Are those presents food? Please, I'm starving. But no, flowers.
Why?
Nice roses. But yeah, like you said, he encounters the armed Audrey, who gives herself a lethal injection, but before dying, tells Hector that the scientists have been conducting blood work to create a cure for their condition, because they too were exposed when the people running the bunker left the vents open, allowing dust to enter.
She even laughs it off because it's like they're so stupid they didn't realize that there's vents open. This stuff is coming right in. Although that makes us also think that what the steel shed and the steel projector room were airtight.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But again, it's this movie. We need to back off a bit, I guess. At the bunker, Dr. Carter's questioning Reggie about her health. And two things here, one of which you had already mentioned. For me, I find that she is way too jovial here. She's making jokes. She's not taking anything seriously, ignoring the fact that she's just been forcefully separated from her sister. Is getting all these weird health questions. Like, do you have hepatitis? Have you ever been pregnant? And she says, I thought so once. And that's what made me believe the scene where she throws up in the bathroom at the radio station.
Right.
So you're on the same page there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're both wrong, even though it makes sense.
It's not even just those two, because there's another point where she says, like, she's been getting easily sick or something like that. I don't remember it well enough. But, yeah, there's a number of times in this movie where I thought, oh, they're subtly hinting that she's pregnant.
Me too. It would have added a layer to the movie. I don't know why they didn't. But this is where she spots two kids watching them, I guess are other survivors. And now we find out the truth about what the scientists are up to. This is actually pretty fucking dark for this movie.
Yeah.
Really fucking dark. It's an appreciated turn, though, into something more serious.
Well, it makes sense. It's underground. The lighting is not going to be as great. And, you know,
fuck off. What they've been doing is rounding up survivors, rendering them brain dead, and using them to farm blood to keep themselves alive through transfusions until they can find a cure. That's fucked up. I love it. I do like, too, how we see the doctors or the scientists who are dealing with these bodies becoming more and more absent-minded.
Yes.
I guess Jamie Kidwell was right. This part is well-written. Let's give Jamie some props.
Okay, this part's well-written. This is also a part that kind of disproves the well-acted portion as well, though.
That's fair. It is...
These two scientists are terrible.
Yeah, they're not good. No. Dr. Carter just drops Sam's death on Reggie haphazardly, which seems very weird.
As he's exiting the room, just like mic drop. What about my sister? She's dead.
he's so annoyed too, which I love. Jeffrey Lewis is great in this. When used properly. But yeah, when Carter leaves, Reggie knocks out another scientist and the escape begins. It's costume change for Hector, who now drives up to the bunker dressed as a cowboy and takes out the guard with a still living Sam who was in the trunk of the car. So apparently Audrey intentionally gave Sam a sedative, not the lethal injection.
Loved it.
I did too.
This is where things started to click for me.
What do you mean?
With the entire Audrey character.
Yeah.
It all started to come together.
Okay. See, it did not for me.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why she needed to give her the sedative and not just shoot the other scientist anyway.
I think it was just a matter of finding the right openings.
Fair. How did Hector know where the bunker was?
Oh, I'm going to assume... And this is a bit of a stretch, but plausible, because she tells him it's all in the letter that she wrote down as much as she could about how it was a sedative, that she's alive, that they're harvesting these people. You need to go to the bunker to save her. What I gathered from it, because when they come face to face, you know, she says, I left a note. And, you know, you'd think part of it is a confession or a suicide note or something like that.
That's exactly what I thought.
That's what I thought up until, like, now. This is where it's all starting to come together to me. And I'm like, oh, she's actually been portrayed as the jerk. Like, this, you know, they spent so much time early in the movie making it seem like the scientists were trying to save people and that she was more concerned with, say, self-preservation because she's like, we shouldn't be bringing more people here. But later you find out she's saying we shouldn't be bringing people here to save those people.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, acknowledging the fact that they're just killing other people to stay alive.
Yeah, she says originally that, like, it was supposed to be this and then it became something else. And yeah, originally it was about self-preservation and then it became more about us versus them type thing.
Yeah.
I think this is, like, the best writing this movie does is with this character. And you turns out this character that I thought at the beginning was just this jerk the entire time, this unhappy, just unlikable character is... like the most heroic one in the movie until she takes herself out.
Yeah, she is a great swerve character. That's for sure. Very, very good. Reggie discovers the blood farm and is captured in what is a beautifully lit scene. And that is something I do have to say about this movie. The color palette is fantastic. A lot of neon purples, pinks, greens, blues all really work. It gives that Outrun vibe that's become so popular today. And this, I guess, is where it originated. Not the movie, but the time, obviously. And as per a lot of the movies we cover on the show, Sandro, we're now in a full-on race toward the end.
Yes.
So I just have bullet points here. Hector rigs a car to explode. Yes. How he knows to do this, I don't know, but that's fine. Sam infiltrates the bunker and shuts off the power, killing the blood farm. Not sure how she would know how to do any of this. Reggie rescues the kids from the scientists. Plausible. The sisters reunite after Reggie almost shoots Sam in the head. It works. Quick shot of the
good aim she's got. You praised their aim earlier, and the whole time when you're praising their aim, I'm like, when were they good at aiming at anything?
When they were shooting the car.
They hit a car. It's not like it's a small target.
From a distance, it was.
With semi-automatics?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Quick shot of the scientists who are going to kill the kids, now strapped to tables, giggling while being gassed. It was a weird scene, but I kind of dug it. It's poorly acted, but it's really creepy. The four hop in a car with Hector and speed off. So the scientists get into the rigged car, and it explodes, because we knew it would. They survive one final zombie attack and take off. Now, what happens the next day irritates the shit out of me.
Is this the next day or was this a period of time? It's hard to tell.
Well, it was dark when they left and now it's bright.
Yeah, no, but all I'm saying is it might have been a week
later. Oh, it might have been a period of time later, yeah. I don't know. I guess it doesn't rain that often in Southern California. But a rainstorm clears the skies and washes the remaining dust away. I hate it. I hate that a lot. But let's roll with it.
Okay.
Reggie and Hector have taken on the roles of surrogate parents for the kids. I don't know why in the hell Hector is throwing guns into the garbage. There is zero reason to believe threats no longer exist in this world.
It's just like, you might as well just put him in a glove compartment or a storage box. Yeah. Like, no truck is going to come by and empty that garbage.
Also, keep your guns. Don't worry about emptying garbage. But this is where they, like, Reggie and Hector seem fucking crazy now.
Oh, yeah, they do.
That makes no sense, emptying the guns in the garbage. Them believing that the entire burden of civilization has fallen on them now. I don't think that's really a concern for you. Because, I mean, any other people come from this relationship, it's just going to be inbreeding. Refusing to walk against the lights at the crosswalk.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. I find it hilarious for one reason. Why do you think it's hilarious?
Because when the credits start rolling, they play football in the middle of the street.
Yep, I have that too. I found it hilarious, though, because Sam tries to show them how crazy that is by running into the road, but is almost run over by another survivor. I thought that was really funny. But the two immediately headed off, and Sam hops in the car with this guy, Danny Mason Keener. And as they speed off together, the man's vanity license plate reads DMK. I thought that was a fantastic callback.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant. I also wonder how this guy has been surviving.
Yeah, no, that doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. A lot of things in this don't matter.
No.
But as you were saying, as the credits roll, Reggie, Hector, and the kids run playfully in the streets, completely going against everything they just said they were trying to do.
Yeah.
So we fade to black and end of movie. One of the worst endings I think I've ever seen.
It's pretty bad.
It is very bad.
The movie absolutely goes downhill when they leave the mall.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The mall, my favorite part. It's the meatiest part of the story. So much happens there. There's so much that could happen there. You even look at the radio station, and it's a massive warehouse of a space that's poorly used with certain little bits of furniture spread throughout. It just seems like a waste. The bunker, the think tank, like that, it doesn't feel nearly as large as it's supposed to, because we don't see much of it.
No, and what we see of it looks like kind of the same generic hallways. So yep. It's hard to tell if that's supposed to represent a different location or not.
Yeah.
Within the bunker.
The movie has a lot of good. It's just not stitched together properly.
No.
Do you know what I mean, though? Like, I find that there are a fair amount of pros in this, but they're just kind of peppered throughout. More cons than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how this became a cult classic. I think it's passable, but I don't know. Yeah, it's weird that I missed this one. You think this would fit right into my film preference? But yeah. Before we really get into that, curious to hear your thoughts on what the budget and the gross were.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a low budget for sure. $2 million.
Not even one.
Yeah.
700,000.
Yeah.
Do you think it made money?
No.
It made a lot of money.
Did it really?
Yeah. Yeah, it made $14.4 million.
Oof. Well, hey, good for them.
Yeah, right? I'm surprised it never gave us a sequel. I mean, they've been talking about it for a long time, but it's never come to be.
Too many sequels for movies that involve the end of civilization, because they just keep finding more civilization.
Yeah, that's very true. That's why I quit The Walking Dead like 8 times. Reviews. The ratings have surprised me.
Really?
Take a guess at IMDb.
6.2.
6.3.
Oh!
The critics over at Rotten Tomatoes?
41.
Almost double that.
What?
79.
See, now if you had said that was the fans, because this is, as you said, a cult classic, I could get that. But the critics?
Yeah. Critics loved it. It's, yeah, certified fresh.
Oh, wow.
What about the audience?
Same thing. 71.
58.
I don't understand what is going on here.
I don't either. I fully expected critics to shit on this movie because I think it deserves it. I expected audience score to be much higher because people like what they like, and that's fine. They're not watching it with a critical eye. And I think we shouldn't have done that either, really. I think I fucked up by picking this movie. I just wanted a reason to watch it.
We've been saying that way too much lately.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say it more so for next week.
We're not there yet.
Awards, Sandro.
Alrighty. So, what did you have for your least favorite or worst character?
You know, I think that we are going to have, for the first time in a while, completely different answers for these categories.
It's very likely, yeah.
So for least favorite character, I picked Reggie.
Okay.
Mary Catherine Stewart. I really liked her a lot in the beginning. But then the character, like I said, just started flip-flopping throughout the rest of the movie and became nonsensical by the end without any reason. Acted really well, but I just, there was no consistency whatsoever. And I just didn't know why Reggie stayed the lead of the movie throughout. You?
So I went with Ivan E. Roth as Willy.
Really? Interesting.
The king of overacting that I never want to see in a movie again.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's harsh.
Yeah, it was bad. I just wanted him to shut up. He shouldn't have been the zombie that talked.
Really? That's...
And they were trying to play it up as like, oh, he's the humorous one. It's like, no, no. Shut up.
Shit, man. That's weird. I really dug him. I thought he was great.
I hate you so much. And then when you get shot, I'm happy. I don't have to listen to you again.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was so annoying.
Favorite character? Can I guess?
Yeah, sure.
Audrey?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's the funny part, because when I watched this movie the first time, I had her written down as my least favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because, like, the whole time, she is just a bitch the whole time. And then when I'm watching it the second time, and I'm going through the movie, and I'm like, holy shit, she's trying to save people this entire time. This is, like, a brilliant character. And you go back and you listen to every conversation she has arguing with the other scientists, and when you know that that's what she's doing, you realize that the conversations are made to sound like they're talking about saving people, but the scientists are talking about saving themselves entirely.
Yep.
And her entire purpose of contending with them is because she doesn't want these other survivors to come up like upon the same fate.
Yeah. Audrey is a fantastic character.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Is that what you had?
No.
Oh, okay.
Now, Audrey is my close second.
Okay.
I went with the person I hated the most at the beginning, and that's Sam. Kelly Maroney did a great job playing this character. To me, this is the exact opposite of Reggie. Like I said, I found her incredibly annoying at the beginning, but I really grew to enjoy the character as the film progressed because they did the right thing, and they gave this character actual development. By the end of the movie, I was stoked for her, whereas the beginning, I just wanted her off screen at all opportunity. Just get her off the screen, give me Reggie, give me fucking Dupree, for that matter. But as the movie played out, I was more and more invested in the character. I wanted to see her come out on top, like especially when you find out she's got the rash and that she's probably the only one that's infected. Then you realize that's not the case whatsoever, and then she ends up finding her guy, and they speed off happily ever after. Like, that's a great, solid character arc for a dumb fucking movie. But Audrey's character is very, very good.
And not just that the character is good, it's brilliantly written. It's probably the only piece of good writing in this movie is the misdirect on how they make her come off initially as someone who is supposed to be detestable and not wanting to save people. And then you go back and realize that they wrote in every possibility to make her seem heroic, and it's the context that throws you off.
Well, that's the writing. That's not the character.
Well,
my problem here is that the character is too good for this movie. It doesn't make sense to have them interact with everybody else they interact with here. It's a fantastic character. It just doesn't fit for me. That's why I went with Sam. And that's why I had Audrey as the close second, because I do love Audrey's character. She is absolutely amazing. The way she handles every scenario she's in is brilliant, but it just doesn't fit for me.
Yeah.
My memorable line.
Okay.
Actually comes from Willy. And it's because it provides the type of chaos that a story like this should have.
Okay.
And that is after he shoots one of his own guys to take away Reggie's hostage, she screams at him, "You're crazy." And his reply is, "I'm not crazy. I just don't give a fuck." Now, that's the villain mentality that we should expect from this. This is the villain mentality we get in movies like The Road Warrior. Like, it's someone who's terrifying because of their lack of not just sanity, but the safety of themselves or the people around them. They're completely unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to do, but you know it's not going to be good.
Well, when you got nothing to lose anymore.
Exactly. So that line stood out to me a lot. I'm curious to know what you picked, though, because to me this one's iconic.
Oh, okay. Let's follow up yours with, so it was when Sam said, "You were born with an asshole, Doris. You don't need Chuck."
Yeah, that's very much a Sandro line.
It made me laugh. Even now, it's like, that's clever. Oh, I like it. I mean, you know, deep answer like you had.
And that's fine. The reason why I hung on to my line is because it reminded me of what I wanted the movie to be. I'm really enjoying the fact that the line you picked represents the movie that it is trying to be and that it actually is. And that is, it's more of a comedy than anything. And I think I just wasn't prepared for that. And the fact that it made you laugh out loud means it's effective, right? So they're doing something right here. And that's interesting. I like those two choices.
I mean, it stands out a little more, too, because it lacked a number of laughs later on. Not as many to cling on to, but...
yeah, it just got bogged down.
Yeah, you gave me one. Good for you. You got one laughs.
Yeah, I said we were going to have four different answers for this. We might have the same memorable scene. What is yours?
Cowboy Hector.
Okay, definitely we picked four different ones. Cowboy Hector, interesting. Why?
It was just so weird and stupid, and it actually made me pay attention to the movie again for the first time in like an hour of runtime.
That's not true. Good choice, though. Cowboy Hector is pretty funny.
And I mean, it's a ridiculously silly scene, but it's a fun one, too.
I think we should both acknowledge that Robert Beltran did an amazing job as Hector. He just wasn't the worst. He wasn't the best, in both of our opinions, as a character. He was consistent. And in a movie like this, that is appreciated.
Yeah, there was a few flaws for sure, but overall, his character was neither the best nor the worst. So
yeah, for me, it would be the mall montage.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I loved every second of that. I thought it was fantastic. So I guess get into some final thoughts about Night of the Comet.
All right, go ahead.
I'm going to start off by saying I don't feel I should apologize to you for making you watch this movie, but I'm sorry that I didn't pick a better one because I'm very glad that I finally saw this. I've been meaning to for a long time and I finally have, and I don't have to think about it again. That being said, I can see myself returning to it somewhere down the road. If I pick up the Scream Factory Blu-ray, I'm hoping that there would be some commentary tracks or some other special features on there. I haven't checked that out yet. But I think watching this movie twice so close together, I spent way too much time on it. I didn't let it breathe. I just got pelted with shit that annoyed me for 3 hours. And it has many more weaknesses than it does strengths. But the strengths are pretty good. I'm not going to recommend this to anybody. I'll think back to it here and there, and some parts will make me laugh and some parts will make me wish I had not seen it at all. But we've definitely covered worse. We will cover worse. So 1984 is Night of the Comet. Not the movie I wanted it to be, not the movie I expected it to be. I really don't have a lot of good to say. Honestly, anybody who's not into 1980s low budget sci-fi comedy horror, stay the fuck away, because you're going to hate this with every inch of your being. Sandra?
Interesting.
Not really. It should be pretty evident. What did you think?
It's fine. I don't recommend the movie, but I don't tell people to swerve away from it, I guess. It's all right. I definitely felt a little bit more fatigued with it the second time through, despite the revelations of the character of Audrey.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the first time I watched it, I was just like, it's just a stupid, silly, dumb 80s movie. It's fine. Right? It's inoffensive, is what I think is like the best thing I can say about it. It's just a movie you watch.
Yeah. I would like to add that I am too old for this movie. This movie is not made for me. When it was being written, the writer director was interviewing teenage girls at a mall as to what they would do if they found themselves in a post-apocalyptic environment. And like a lot of them are talking about shopping or worrying about dating and stuff like that. And like, I don't give a shit about that anymore. Like I don't have the concerns of a teenager anymore. And that's what a lot of this movie is. So I think I just kind of missed being the target audience. I think both of us did. I think that's the detachment we have, because we both pointed out things about the movie that we've liked. I think we just have to accept that the movie might be good, just not for us.
Ah, it's just a stupid, fun movie that is just kind of there. I don't get the praise, okay. But at the same time, I don't see anybody that could truly just hate on it for no reason.
That's a great way of putting it. I agree with you.
Like, maybe that's a bad spot to be in for a movie, this kind of entire middle road, you know, disinterest, but really, it's fine. It's just fine.
It's a 39-year-old movie. What are we going to say?
All right. Well, that was our thoughts on Night of the Comet. If you guys want to let us know what you think, you can hit us up on social media. We are on Facebook at BS Bargain Bin, bsbargainbin.com, facebook.com/bsbargainbin. And, of course, just leave comments in the YouTube video section. Ben, next month is our fan pick.
Sure is.
What are we watching?
First of all, I'd like to ask who picked this movie.
Ian.
Ian. We're going to have some words later. Because next week we'll be talking 1987's Spaceballs.
There it is, Planet Druidian. And underneath the air shield, 10,000 years of fresh air. We must get through that air shield.
We will, sir. Once we kidnap the princess, we can force her father, King Roland, to give us the combination to the air shield, thereby destroying Planet Druidia and saving Planet Spaceball.
Everybody got that?
Spaceballs, the movie.
Princess Vespa's spaceship within range, sir.
Good.
What's going on?
It's either the 4th of July, or someone's trying to kill us!
Now we will show her who is in charge of this galaxy.
If you do not give me the combination to the air shield, Dr. Slotkin will give your daughter back her old nose!
No!
Only one man and his trusted companion can save Planet Druidia from disaster.
Okay, Eagle 5, coming in.
Lone Star.
First, they must learn the secrets of yogurt.
Yogurt?
I am the keeper of a greater magic.
The Force?
No, the Schwartz.
Avoid capture on a distant planet.
Come up to comb the desert, you hear me? Comb the desert!
Found anything yet?
We ain't found.
Battle the entire Spaceball army.
Shut my ear!
Holy!
And escape the clutches of Dark Helmet.
I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Abandon ship. Proceed to escape pods.
What the hell's the matter with this seatbelt?
When does this happen in the movie?
Give me Paul!
Spaceballs. The movie.
How do I know you're not making faces at me under that thing?
Until next week, have a good one.
All the best.